Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Samina Spin. Missed you guys last week, but I'm back at it today. So today, I am going to talk about stories that created magic in my life. And the reason I say that is because I've been a voracious reader my entire life. I remember a few years ago, my brother had said to me that his daughter reminds him of me because she's always coming up to him, trying to get him to read her a book. Well, this was a few years ago, but she always has a book in her hand and wanting someone to read it, or she had at the time. And I used to be like that. I remember my brother had given me his collection of Disney books, and I used to read those books every day. When I was very small, I used to read every day. Before I could read, I was doing what my niece did. I would hand someone a book to read to me. And then as I discovered books more and more, I read several a week. Up until about fifth grade, I think, I read several a week. And then I still continued to read a lot, but not as much. And then, of course, there were books that I fell in love with, books that I read and I was entirely too young to be reading because I barely understood them. Like, I tried to read The Hobbit in fourth grade. I tried to read Nelson Mandela's book. Or actually, it wasn't Nelson Mandela's book, but it was a book about Nelson Mandela when I was like 13 and I could barely understand what was in it. But it was a book and I was reading it. So that's where I was. But there are books that stick out to me in my memory because they did create magic in my life, because they instilled a sense of wonder in me and they contributed to me becoming an author eventually because I wanted to tell my own stories. The first book that really did that for me, maybe it's not accurate to say the first book, but a book that really stirred something within me and made me excited to read it was the very first Shakespeare play I ever read. I think I was 13. I'm not sure my exact age. I was somewhere between 13 and 15 years old. And my sister had it, and it was in our little library on the front porch. And grabbed it and started looking through it. And it was one of those Folgers versions. Now, those versions of Shakespeare are really cool because at the beginning of each act and scene, they summarize what's happening in that act and scene. And then on every page, they have a list of the vocabulary that you might have problems, that you might find to be problematic. And this was before I learned Shakespeare in school. I just grabbed this on my own and started reading it. It was Much Ado About Nothing. It was one of the comedies. I'm glad I didn't try to grab one of the tragedies. I might have given up on Shakespeare entirely too early, but I did. I grabbed one of the comedies. And again, it was Much Ado About Nothing. And I remember reading one of the lines by Beatrice. Beatrice is one of my lifelong literary loves because she was beautiful, she was intelligent, she was witty, she was sharp. She was super sharp. It was difficult to keep up with her. And I like women like that. I like women who are unapologetic about being sharp, and they may or may not throw you the breadcrumbs. And that's who Beatrice was, and I loved her for that. So in the very beginning of this play, the gentlemen have come back from the wars. They're in Tuscany, and they've come back from some wars, and they're on their way. They're coming back. They're on their way. And a messenger comes and says that they're coming. And then Beatrice starts picking at Benedict. Now, Beatrice and Benedict, they go back and forth for various reasons. But he's not even there taking a dig at him. She takes several digs at him. And the messenger says, I take it he's not in your good books. And then she says, if he were, I'd have my library burned. Something along those lines. I don't think I'm quoting it verbatim, but it was something along those lines. And I remember laughing out loud at that line, and I remember it to this day. If you were in my books, I would burn my library. Or it was either that, or if you were in my books, I would burn them. But either way, it was something along those lines, and I remember laughing, and I was proud of myself because I understood what was going on, and it was Shakespeare. It wasn't difficult for me. Shakespeare has never been that difficult for me, never been that challenging. I just love it to death. But I fell in love with that play, and then that led me to fall in love with Shakespeare. And Shakespeare, for me, is almost like a mentor. Even though he hasn't been around for centuries, he's almost like a mentor because he could take pretty much any plot and make it relatable and use such words that just stir your heart. And that's what great literature does. It stirs your heart, and it stands the test of time, which is what he's done and what he will do forever. So that book is very special to me. That story is very special to me because, again, because of Beatrice. I love strong female characters like that who are just going to be who they are, whether you like it or not. So I feel like that kind of has influenced my life, seeing characters like that, because I've always aspired to be something like that. So that's the first one that I'm sharing with you. And then another one, this is actually before I discovered Shakespeare, was a book that I discovered in my fifth grade teacher's library called Fairy Tales of India. And it had all these different stories from India. And it was illustrated, so there were pictures. And I remember looking through the pictures and seeing brown people who looked like me. Now, that was important at that time because I was in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Literally, my family was the first Indian family to move into Lansdale, Pennsylvania. And there might have been two other Indian kids in my school at the time. If that, now there might have been one black kid. You get the idea. And then the stories we read, how likely do you think it is that I would see anybody that looked like me? So I opened this book and I started reading it, and there were these different stories, little brown men with turbans and dhotis. And so that's, the book wasn't stereotypical. These were stories that were set in villages centuries ago. So that's what people would look like. That's what they were dressed like. And then I saw, for the first time, I saw Rama and Sita, a version of that story. And then, of course, Sita kind of looks like me too. So I remember seeing this. It was literally the first time in my life that I saw a book like that. So that created magic in my life because I saw people who look like me. Never underestimate how important representation is and how important it is to see people who look like you, either movies or books or represented in art in some way, especially for me. With Indians, I grew up around a bunch of people who were either in business or IT. I didn't even see Indians as much in the arts. And the arts are life for me. So anything with Indians and art related is grabbing my attention. But this book just really moved me because, like I said, I had ever seen anything like that. And They look like me. And in all fairness to my parents, like I said, I was in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Where were they going to find those books? And, you know, we didn't have the internet back then. So it just would have taken way too long to find books like that. So they just bought me whatever was around and whatever the other kids were reading because they didn't want me to feel left out. So, yeah, it was the first time I'd seen that. So that was magical for me. Then when I got older, I was actually an adult, and I was teaching. And I came upon this short story by a Guatemalan writer named Augusto Monterroso. And the reason I fell in love with this story is because it was translated from Spanish, but it literally packed a punch of an entire novel in like 3 or 4 paragraphs. And I was amazed by this story because of what he did in such a short space. And I can relate to that as a writer. I have a very succinct style. I don't like to use lots of flowery language. I like to use intelligent language. And I like for you to look at something that may be familiar to you in a different way. But I don't like to do it in hundreds of words. I feel like you can make a point very succinctly. I don't know. That's just me. That's just me. I think fast. So the way things come out, it comes together very quickly. So I can relate to that. And I can appreciate that. But I remember just being awed and taken aback by what this writer was able to do. Now, this one I'm going to share with you because it is so short. So this is The Eclipse by Augusto Monterroso. When Brother Bartolome Arzola felt lost, he accepted that nothing could save him anymore. The powerful Guatemalan jungle had trapped him inexorably and definitively. Before his topographical ignorance, he sat quietly awaiting death. He wanted to die there, hopelessly and alone, with his thoughts fixed on faraway Spain, particularly on the Dos Abrojos convent, where Charles V had once condescended to lessen his prominence and tell him that he trusted the religious zeal of his redemptive work. Upon awakening, he found himself surrounded by a group of indifferent natives who were getting ready to sacrifice him in front of an altar that, to Bartolome, seemed to be in the place in which he would finally rest from his fears, his destiny, from himself. 3 years of healing had given him a fair knowledge of the native tongues. He tried something. He said a few words which were understood. He then had an idea he considered worthy of his talent, universal culture, knowledge of Aristotle. He remembered that a total eclipse of the sun was expected on that day, and in his innermost thoughts, he decided to use that knowledge to deceive his oppressors and save his life. "If you kill me," he told them, "I can darken the sun in its heights." The natives looked at him fixedly, and Bartolome caught the incredulity in their eyes. He saw that a small council was set up and waited confidently, not without some disdain. 2 hours later, Brother Bartolome Arizola's heart spilled its fiery blood on the sacrificial stone, brilliant under the opaque light of an eclipsed sun, while one of the natives recited, without raising his voice, unhurriedly, one by one, the infinite dates in which there would be solar and lunar eclipses. Astronomers of the Mayan community had foreseen and written on their codices without Aristotle's valuable help. So, that was a little bit longer than 3 paragraphs, but it's short. It's really short. And what this author manages to do in that short space is to basically show you who this man is, who this missionary is, and how condescending he is to the people that he's supposed to minister to. And then also, it's just a general commentary on how Native peoples, like the Mayans, were looked down upon. And how that superiority doesn't always work in your favor. It certainly didn't in Brother Bartolome's case. So even before death, he looks down on these people, thinking that they would cower in fear. He didn't realize they already knew. And it's ironic. I love irony. The way he plays with that irony, that this missionary just assumes that these savages don't know what's what. And not only do they know what's what, they know better than he does. So that struck me. And it struck me how succinctly it was written. It also gave me validation that I may write a little short and sweet, but I can say a lot in a few words. So now I'm going to do something a little differently. There's something new I'd like to try. I'm doing it on my blog. I'd like to try it here too. At least once a month, or probably just once a month, I'd like to share a short story, whether it's mine, someone else's. And I'm sharing one on this podcast. We'll see if you like it. And today, I'm sharing one of my own short stories. This was a story I wrote a few years ago. I think it's now been about 5-6 years ago, and I've kept it in my archives. And I put it on my blog last year. And it's a nice little lighthearted blog that I want to share with you. Now, I don't know if this particular story has created a profound impact like the other stories for me, but it's mine. So it's that alone is impactful for me. So I'm going to share this with you. This is called Footsteps in the Light. Javed Ansari bundled himself up to go for a walk after the first snowstorm of the season. It was a sunny day, and he always loved sunshine against the backdrop of snow. The walk would do him good, as he was not feeling like himself recently. Although he was lost in his own thoughts, he could not help but notice footprints leading away from his house. Nothing earth-shattering about footprints, but since he lived alone, he thought it worth investigating. All sorts of thoughts raced through his mind. Who would come to his house and leave? What did they want with him? He really had no interest in being bothered with anyone at the moment. What a nuisance. Oh well, had to be a logical explanation. No big deal. Logic guided his life, after all. As a professor of chemistry at the local university, the past 15 years were about experimentation, finding data, finding solutions, winning awards and accolades, and the respect of his peers. Or they said they respected him. He could take it or leave it. He just wanted to do his work. Well, that was until he met Leila. Leila was on fellowship studying biochemistry. He found her fascinating. Beautiful caramel skin with long dark hair and hazel eyes. He loved her Mumbai accent, especially since she always made fun of his American accent. His American-born confused Desi accent. Of course, he would counter and tell her that her accent was just a British knockoff. She never did like that very much. He smirked when he thought of her annoyance. All the little things they did just to vex each other. Thanks, Edison. My dog. His first appearance on the podcast. She would make fun of his Hindi when he spoke it. Their dinners were a mix of science salon and bombastic banter. She was clever and witty. He had an enormous amount of respect for her. The more time he spent with her, the more besotted he became. Lots of sound effects this evening in the podcast. Sorry about that. All he wanted was to marry her. He meticulously went from jewelry store to jewelry store researching, looking at perfect cuts, sizes, shapes. He wanted the perfect ring for his perfect woman. He chose a halo shape for his angel. He put it aside and tried to put it out of his mind until he saw her the next day. He kept imagining the smile on her face as he placed the ring on her finger. His enthusiasm was short-lived, however. After they had finished the dinner he cooked, he brought up the subject. "Do you want to get married?" he asked her. "What?" she asked, taken aback. "Do you want to get married?" he asked, with a little more hesitation in his voice this time. She paused. At that moment, his stomach sank, and he wished he could have taken the words back. "I didn't know how to tell you this, but my parents arranged my marriage in Mumbai. I just found out a few days ago. I didn't even know they were looking for me." "Are you kidding me? What is it, the 50s? You can't tell them no? If I don't agree, they'll completely cut me off." "Wow, you'll let them dictate your future for money? I don't believe it." "What will we do for money? You're still studying too. I don't know how to be poor." "I do. For you, I would find a way. It's a shame you wouldn't do that for me." "I understand. Javed, I think you should leave." Without another word, she left. Even now, as he trudged through the sun-tinted snow and recalled the memory, it made him sad. He lamented over the broken dreams of the children they could have had. Gorgeous and smart little girl that looked just like her, a handsome, brilliant, and mischievous little boy, a lifetime of missed opportunities. A cold gust of wind smacked him in the face, and he started to not care who those footsteps belonged to. He didn't care who it was or why they were there. The one person he wanted it to be, it just wouldn't be. It didn't matter to him at this point. He walked towards the lake he liked to meditate. As he came closer, he saw a figure. Then he saw two children running near the water. The figure's back was turned, so he didn't see a face. As he came closer, he saw the face that broke his heart all those years ago. "Ella, what are you doing here?" "Raising you and our children." "I came back." "To a life of poverty with me?" "To a life of happiness with you." After warming themselves up with tea, she showed him their wedding picture, like she had been doing every day for the past month since the concussion that causes memory failures. He smiled. He smiled at his lifetime of dreams fulfilled. That was Footsteps in the Light, one of my babies. I hope you enjoyed that. Please get at me with that on my blog with your thoughts or comment on my social media at Samina SKM on Instagram, Samina K. Mogul on Facebook, and at Samina SKM on Twitter. Actually, you know what? On Instagram, I'm just Samina Mogul. Sorry. I get my handles mixed. Just contact me on social media if you have an opinion. I would enjoy that. I love to talk to people about stories, especially the ones that I've written. So that's my little story share for the evening. Let me know what you all think, if you'd like me to continue that. I'm signing off now. If you like what you heard on this podcast and would like to hear more, I have two books available on Amazon, Scheherazade's Daughters and the Siddiqui Brothers in Cairo. And I also have the Behind and Beyond the Veil blog. You can read the story I just read there. And you can find Behind and Beyond the Veil at www.saminakmogul.com. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and the little different flavor I gave you. Have a great evening. Good night and love and light.